this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is Overview of Batch Features in WebSphere version 8.5x. Today's presenters are Mahesh Reddy and Peter Zito. Mahesh works on the WebSphere Extended Deployment Support Team. His role is to support customer issues related to WebSphere Compute Grid, WebSphere Virtual Enterprise, and WebSphere Extreme Scale products. Peter joined the WebSphere Extended Deployment Team in August 2012. In this capacity, he is responsible for all aspects of customer support for the WebSphere Compute Grid, WebSphere Virtual Enterprise, and WebSphere Extreme Scale product. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Mahesh. You may begin.
Thank you, David. Can you hear me properly? Yep, thanks. Hello, everyone. This is Mahesh Reddy from WebSphere XD Level 2 support team. Can we move on to the agenda, please? Slide number 2. Okay. We are going to discuss about a brief overview of Java Batch, included in WebSphere Application Server version 8.5. Compute Grid version 8 is rolled into WebSphere Application Server version 8.5. Previously, this was a separate product that could be installed on top of WebSphere Application Server version 7 or 8. Now, this is known as WebSphere Java Batch. This lives within WebSphere Application Server version 8.5, and it provides a pre-integrated framework for batch workload execution. We'll discuss enhancements to both batch programming model as well as the operational enhancements. Then we'll cover on how to configure the default batch environment, followed by a troubleshooting section. Moving on to slide number 3, please. I believe many of the audience in this session are familiar with WebSphere Compute Grid and prior knowledge of the product. So starting from the top left side, WebSphere Java Batch is a comprehensive solution providing a platform for Java batch processing. And this addresses a multitude of needs. It addresses the need to provide an environment in which batch and online can coexist together. A standardized programming model that aids and facilitates that through a managed runtime that only executes batch jobs, but also be able to facilitate the coordination of batch execution and presence of online applications. There is a support for developers to provide enhanced developer experience to help developers focus on business logic. So there is kind of separation concerns to inherit the programming models supported by the tooling that aids in the application development. They are caretaking to provide an environment that is efficient, which allows efficient batch execution, in particular parallel batch execution. A parallel batch execution directly aimed at assisting batch applications and decreasing overall elapsed time for processing, and which makes better use of system resources. And the facility is necessary to manage a batch workload, whether it's a small workload, medium, or large workload, whether it's a standalone workload or an enterprise batch prod integrated fully into large overall ecosystem. And finally, we have system management facilities, tools and operational commands, and integration points with third-party products such as TWS that makes it possible to bring the experience of the batch processing in WebSphere as a first-class workload into your environment. You can be able to manage it in a coherent and robust fashion. Moving on to slide number 4, please. A batch container, continuing on the overview, just a reminder that there is a runtime component that supports the execution of a batch job. We refer this as a batch container. The batch container is built up on top of WebSphere application server infrastructure. So it leverages all the features of WebSphere application server, such as security model, transaction model, communication support, and J2E programming model, and other extensions and standards that are delivered in WebSphere application servers, including SOAP and HTTP. So at the heart of the batch container is the use of asynchronous beans. And asynchronous beans ends up being the unit of execution on which a batch job executes. So the asynchronous bean, however, is managed by the batch container. So the batch container primitive interfaces of the asynchronous beans to manage the batch jobs supporting batch applications. The life cycle concerning starting of the job, sequencing of the steps, management of checkpoints, management of the state of the jobs, communicating to the job back to the workload manager of the job. The job scheduler and providing a basis for the failure and recovery of the job processing. Moving on to slide number 5, please. In this slide, we are going to discuss about the batch components and workflow. This is the simplified basic flow of the jobs through the system, starting with the submission. It's passing through the scheduler and eventually being dispatched to the endpoint and processed by a batch container. So in this diagram, if you see the number one bullet, batch jobs are submitted to the system using the job management console or programmatically by EJBs, JMS, or web services. If you see the number two, which is the XJCL, we use a job control language model for how the jobs are described. XJCL is an XML job control language. This is similar to the traditional JCL. This is external to the application itself, but it's metadata that describes the sequence of the steps to be executed in the context of a particular job. This also defines various attributes of job execution, such as steps, substitute parameters, input and output values, and so on and so forth. And bullet number three is the scheduler, which manages the job database, assigns job IDs, and the job dispatcher then selects the best endpoint application server for the job to be executed. This is based on several different metrics, such as server weight and number of outstanding job count of an endpoint, etc. The endpoint application server sets up the jobs in the batch container and executes the batch steps based on the definitions we provide in the XJCL. While the job is running, the job dispatcher aggregates job logs and provides lifecycle management functions such as start, stop, cancel, and so on. Moving on to slide number 6. This is a batch programming model. There are several different artifacts types come together comprise a batch job. The developer is responsible for producing at a minimum job step implementation. A job step is a unit of business logic that exists to carry out a particular function that is meaningful in the context of overall business task at hand. However, there are other artifacts that come together to comprise full application and job. So the job themselves are described through a metadata called XJCL as described in the previous slides. And we'll see a snippet of it in the future slide. If you break it up, you'll see number of things. There is a controller bean, what we use inside Respire application server, that there is a runtime EJB that we use by reference from the job definition in order to context with the correct class loaders for your application. Your applications are deployed as set of POJOs, which implement batch steps, which are bundled as an ER file and deployed into a Respire application server, as other ER files are normally deployed. The batch controller bean is simply a JNDA reference, which allows the runtime to switch to a class loader context for your applications. There is no code to write, it's merely a reference. Additionally, in the XJCL, there is a job step control, which gets conditional logic between steps, whether to run step two if step one is successful. And there is a syntax in the XJCL to accommodate this. Batch steps are typically consume input data and produce output data. Batch steps does not require process data. It may be truly a computational, such as printing messages to the logs, putting messages on the queues, etc. But mostly input and output data are involved. When input and output data is involved, batch data streams are artifact types that are configured in your XJCL. BDS identify and provide the data logic for accessing the input and output data. The batch data streams that are supplied with a product out of the box, ready to use for accessing reading and writing of files, reading and writing JDBC files, etc. You're also free to implement your own custom batch data streams to accommodate needs that are not addressed already. So there is an optional checkpoint policy algorithm which defines the interaction between the batch container and a custom checkpoint policy implementation. A checkpoint policy is used to determine when the batch container will checkpoint a running batch job to enable a restart to occur after a planned or unplanned interruption. The product includes two ready-to-use checkpoint policies. There is another optional results algorithm which defines the interaction between the batch container and a custom results algorithm. The purpose of this results algorithm is to provide the overall return code for a job. This algorithm has visibility to the return codes from each of the job steps. VSphere application server includes one ready-to-use results algorithm. Moving on to slide number 7, please. In this slide, this section describes the batch programming model and the enhancements. Moving on to slide number 8, please. OSGI batch applications. VSphere batch enables you to reuse your existing Blueprint OSGI applications to run batch workloads. Batch artifacts are exported as Blueprint services, which are then invoked by the batch container during the job life cycle. To elaborate a bit more, the batch artifacts bundle contains the components of multiple job steps, multiple batch data streams, and a checkpoint algorithm. It also contains a blueprint.xml that defines and describes the assembly of the components. Moving on to slide number 9, please. Record processing policy. VSphere batch includes two different declarative record processing policies. One is skip records, and the second one is step retry. The skip records policy covers the input stream, whereas the step retry policy covers the record processing and the output stream. The step retry policy is not related to skipped records. It will automatically retry a failed step since its last checkpoint. Both the skip record processing and retry step processing are disabled by default. In short, use skip record processing to skip read and write record errors in transactional batch jobs, and use retry step processing to try batch steps again when the process job step method encounters errors in a transactional batch job. Moving on to slide number 10. Record metrics. The record metrics feature provides convenient statistics about the records processed by each job step. In this, you'll get key statistics include the skipped record count, retry count, records processed per second, and total processing time. The values are written to the job log at the end of a step and are available to a batch application through the job step context object. Moving on to slide number 11, please. Job and step listeners. The job and step listener allows application developers to add initialization and cleanup routines to jobs and steps. The listener implementation is specified in a new job-level XJCL element. The batch container invokes the listener at a specific event such as like before job start, after job start, before step start, and before step in. The data can be accessed through the same object job context, job step context. Moving on to slide number 12, please. Persistent job context. Job and step context information is available with the updated Westware batch support. The job step context information is available to all job types, and it exists for the life of the job as opposed to the life of a step. The step specific context information is reset at each job step. Any new step level user data is persisted to database at each checkpoint so that it is available at job restart. Moving on to slide number 13. Configurable transaction model. Westware support for a transactional local transaction mode of operation. In this mode, no global transaction is started. The connection object is shared between the container and your code through the job step context object. This significantly improves performance by reducing the overhead required to manage global transactions. This mode is especially useful if your data is located on the same database system as the job scheduler tables. In addition, large cursors are less likely to be closed when transactions are committed. Moving on to slide number 14, please. Batch data stream timeouts. Westware batch allows you to configure a batch data stream timeout for each job step. As a result, you can now define short timeouts for transactions and long timeouts for batch data streams. Previously, there was a single timeout for the transaction and actual open of the BDS. So if you had a large record you need to open, that could potentially cause timeout. But now there is a separate timeout just for that open. Moving on to slide number 15, please. COBOL support. COBOL has been the prevalent language to run batch-style workloads in the past. And even today, there is a large existing COBOL base for the COBOL on the ZOS platform. Java batch adds support to easily call into the existing COBOL assets to run modern batch workloads. There is some limitation here. You can't call back from COBOL into the Java, but this allows you to reuse your existing COBOL code along with the Java batch. Moving on to the slide number 16. Multithreading. Westware batch allows the running of parallel jobs and their subjobs in the same JVM if needed. This capability is especially useful when subjobs are typically very short in duration. And the overhead of distributing the subjobs across servers is much larger compared to the actual work to be completed. I'm moving on to slide number 17, please. Parallel steps. This is an example of how the parallel batch XJCL looks like. Parallel step support allows you to run some steps of a job as parallel jobs themselves. This approach is different from running two steps concurrently, which is not currently supported. A parallel step can be thought of as a top-level job with the sub-job XJCL generated using the step's own XJCL snippet. Moving on to slide number 18. Heterogeneous steps. This web batch allows job to contain different types of steps. For example, a job can have a mixture of batch or compute intensive and native job steps. So this capability adds immense flexibility to the batch programming model, as different parts of a job can be run based on their nature, whether it's transactional or not. Moving on to slide number 19, please. At this point, I'll hand over the control to my colleague, Peter Zito, who is going to cover operational enhancements, how to configure the default batch environment and troubleshooting section. Thank you.
Thank you, Mahesh. I'll get started. I'll be covering the operation enhancements found in the new version of WebSphere Application Server 8.5. Can we go on to slide number 20? There are three operational batch enhancements found in WebSphere 8.5. They are the new security models, a new memory overlay protection functionality, and the new scheduler, the new job scheduler system programming interfaces. I'll be covering each one in the next section. Can we move on to slide 21? Okay. In WebSphere 8.5, you can now secure the job scheduler using groups, roles, or a combination of groups and roles. In the group security model, the administrator does not assign job roles to specific users. A user can complete an action for a job only if the user and job are members of the same group. For example, if two users are members of the same group and each submits a job that is assigned to the same group, then both users can view and take action against each other, against each of the two jobs. The second security model is the role security model. A user can take a job-related action only if the user's role permits that action. The user can be granted three roles, LR submitter role, LR admin role, or the LR monitor role. The LR admin role has the authority to perform all job scheduler application actions on all jobs regardless of the job ownership. The LR submitter role can only act on jobs that are owned by the submitters themselves. And the last role is the LR monitor role, and they can only view and download job logs but cannot submit or operate any jobs. Cannot submit or operate any functions on the jobs. The last security model is a combination of the two, a group and role security model. Users can take a job-related action only if the user and job are members of the same group and the user role permits the job action. For example, if two users are members of the same group and each submit a job that is assigned to the same group, then both users can view and take action against either, to the same group, then both users can view and take actions against either of the two jobs. If the first user is the LR admin role, the user can view and take jobs action against both jobs. If the second user is the LR submitter role, the user can view and take jobs only against the job and that the second user submitted. If the second user is the LR admin role, if the second user is the LR monitor role instead of the submitter role, the user is disallowed from submitting a job, but is permitted to view jobs submitted by the first user. We can move on to slide number 22. The second operation enhancement is the memory overload protection feature. This feature delays the execution of the job until other currently running jobs complete and free up enough memory. This serves as a way to protect the endpoint from going out of memory when too many jobs are overloaded on the grid endpoint. The endpoint server determines the amount of available memory by querying the JVM and assessing the memory requirements of all the active jobs currently running on the server. There are two ways to enable this feature. You can enable it using the memory attribute tag in the XJCLs that submits the job, or you can use the WebSphere variable. The WebSphere variable is the grid underscore memory underscore overload underscore protection. Move on to slide number 23. This is the, I'll be going over the four new job scheduler system programming interfaces introduced in WebSphere Application Server 8.5. The SPIs are classes you implement to manage a list of groups to which a user is assigned, to control user actions against jobs, to suppress the writing of log lines, or to provide an installation-specific audit string validation rule. These SPI classes are added to the WasHomeLib class directory or added to the job scheduler shared library and are loaded when the job scheduler first starts. You can enable these new your implementation of these classes by defining the correct SPI tag in the xd.spi properties file. Slide number 24. The group membership filter SPI. This allows you to manage a list of groups to which a user is assigned. You can use the SPI in two ways, to modify the list of groups that a federated repository returns or to serve as an alternate to the federated repository. You enable this SPI using the group.membership.manage tag in the XD SPI properties file. Slide 25. The job log filter SPI is used to suppress writing the log lines to the server logs, job logs, or both types of logs. You can also override the application log line. This is useful because it allows you to customize anything for the job logs. You could enable this by using the spi.job.log.filter tag in the same xd.spi properties file. Move on to slide number 26. The job operation authorization SPI is used for fine-grained access control over each user action, permitting or denying the operation. This SPI can override the system when the system permits the operation. However, the SPI cannot override the system when the system denies that operation. And this SPI can only be invoked after you configure the job security policy for the job scheduler. This one is enabled using the job.operation.authorize tag. Move on to slide number 27. The last SPI is the audit string validation SPI. You can use this validation rule to enforce local auditing requirements and provide custom error messages to guide the user to a successful save. Again, this is enabled using the audit.string validator tag in the xd.sbi.properties file. That covers all the operational enhancements found in WebSphere Application 8.5. We can move on to slide number 28, and I'll cover configuring the default batch environment. Let's move on to slide number 29. To get the default job environment, we first have to configure the job scheduler, configure a grid endpoint, and then I'll cover submitting a sample job to the scheduler and having it dispatched to the endpoint. We can move on to slide number 30. The first thing you need on the cell is two WebSphere application server. One server will be hosting the job scheduler, and the other application server will be the grid endpoint. The grid endpoint is the one that hosts your batch application, where the job scheduler dispatches the job to and the job actually starts to run. Job scheduler accepts job submission and dispatches those jobs to the correct endpoint to run. The job scheduler has a backend database used to store the job information for each job. And for the default, we ship with an embedded Apache Derby database. This is automatically created and configured as a default scheduler database when none is specified. To configure the job scheduler, you go to the admin console, and on the left side under system administration, on the bottom, you should see a link to say job scheduler. When you select that link, you'll be taken to the next, slide, slide number 31. In this panel, is the job scheduler panel. This one is where you configure the four data that needs to be provided for the job scheduler. You must supply the deployment target, the database schema name, the data source JNDI name, and the endpoint job log location. If you could see the first bullet, that specifies that I'm pointing to one of my servers on one of my nodes that's currently named LRS. And once you select that server, you'll see that the data source JNDI name goes to none. The reason it goes to none is because it's you can specify the JNDI name if you don't want to use the default Derby database that we provide. The minute you hit apply or OK, it'll take you to the next panel. It'll refresh the page, and then you'll see that we insert the default Derby JNDI name. We can proceed on to page number 32. As you can see, once you hit the apply for this part, data source JNDI name will be updated with JDBC/LRSCHERD JNDI name. This is the embedded Apache Derby database that's automatically created and configured for you. Go on to slide number 33. After you configure the job scheduler, you have to configure an endpoint to connect to the job scheduler. Configuring the endpoint is very simple. All you need to do is deploy a batch application to any application server. This could be done any way you wish. You could either use the admin console to deploy the application or scripting or custom way that you your environment handles it. If this is the first batch environment, I'm sorry, if this is the first batch application installed on the server or cluster, then the server or cluster needs to be restarted before the endpoint will be picked up by the job scheduler. We can move on to slide number 34. To verify that you actually have the grid endpoint connected to the job scheduler, you could go in the admin console. You go back to the same location, the system administration. Under system administration, there is a link for job scheduler, and that'll take you to the same page that hosts the that you use to configure the job scheduler. And on the right-hand side, you'll see a link that says grid endpoints. When the application is deployed on the server, the common batch container is automatically deployed on the server and the default Derby database source. So from this slide, you can see that on our job scheduler, we have one server configured as the endpoint. That server's name is LREE, and the default JNDI name is the JDBC/PGC. This basically configures your endpoint and job scheduler with using the default Derby databases. You can IBM provides some data there. IBM provides DDLs that can allow you to configure any of the tables for any other of the other database products that we support. Can move on to slide 35, and I'll walk you through submitting a sample job. You can to submit a sample job, I use the job management console, which is hosted on the job scheduler. It's a standalone web interface that you could use to perform job operations such as submitting jobs, monitoring job execution, perform operational actions against the job, view job logs, manage the job repository. You access the job management console by providing the job scheduler host name and the port number. This is the default application port /JMC in any web browser, and it should bring you to the JMC console. Next page. Page 36. Once you get to the JMC console, you could on the left-hand side, you'll be provided with some links. One of the links is to submit a job. Once you hit the link to submit a job, it brings you to this page, and then you could submit the browse for the specific XJCL you want to submit. As Mahesh explained, that the XJCL is what you submit, so you could have it runs on the job scheduler and the job gets dispatched to the endpoint. On this page, you could schedule when you want to have the date, when the job wants to be run, and specify any delays for execution. You go to the next page on page 37. Once you submitted the job, you could actually view the job and see where it's running. Again, you view the job through the JMC console, and in the JMC console, you should see on the left-hand side the view job links. Once the view job links is on, once you click on the view job links, it takes you to a new panel that shows the current job that's executing or any jobs that were executed. From this panel, you could actually click on the job and download the logs or actually view any of the view the status of the job. In this field, you can see the job name, the job ID number, who submitted the job, when the job was last updated, the state of the job, if it's in a submit state, executing state, or a restartable state, and which endpoint server actually was dispatched to the job and running the job. And that covers the configuring the default batch environment. We can move on to slide number 38, and I'll talk about some basic troubleshooting tips for troubleshooting the batch environment. Next page, on page 39. One of the main common problems is database problems. A failure in the job scheduler database will prevent the job scheduler from starting. The job scheduler database, the job scheduler uses the database for storing and running tasks. So we must have that available to us when the job scheduler starts, or else it's going to fail. And go on to slide 40. When we don't have access to the database, it could mean the database is not corrected, not created, or we just don't have a connection to that database. The scheduler will fail with an SQL exception, like the one in the bullet two, saying that the scheduler cannot find the database. And once we have a problem finding the database, the scheduler, again, will fail. But this is there's a custom property to prevent the scheduler from failing, and the custom property is shown in bullet number one. It's the shutdown scheduler on backend failure. If you set that custom property to false, when the scheduler starts up and it detects that there is a problem with the backend database for storing the jobs, it won't shut down the scheduler and it'll continue to be up. But this also means that the job scheduler will not be performing as a job scheduler anymore. Can move on to slide number 41. In the previous example, we created the default batch environment, and the default Derby database was created and configured when we select the JNDI, the default JNDI name. If the database was not created, the fastest way to fix this issue is to use the admin console and change the scheduler to host none, and reselecting the server to host the job scheduler. But we also provide data definition languages located in the app server root directory / scheduler. You could run these DDLs to create the actual Derby database or to create any of the other databases that we support, such as DB2 or DB2 Oracle databases. Let's move on to slide 42. The second common error that we see is a job being stuck in the executing or submitted status. When a job is in the executing status, it means the job scheduler has dispatched the job to the available endpoint, and the job is executing on that endpoint. In this picture, you can see that the state of one of my jobs is stuck in the executing status, but it was dispatched to the application server, LREE. That's my endpoint. So I'll go over how to troubleshoot this one. Once we know that the what application server that it got dispatched to, we have to take a look at the job logs from the application server to see what happened during the time of execution. We can move on to slide number 43. This is from my endpoint log, and it shows that the job actually went into a restartable state because it ended abnormally. The endpoint database, the endpoint also has a database that keeps the has the state of the jobs. And right now, the endpoint database says that the job is in a restartable state, but the scheduler database says the job is in executing state. So if we go on to slide 44, the fastest way to fix this issue is to restart the endpoint. When you restart the endpoint, in Web Server Application Server 8.5, the endpoint and the job scheduler maintains a heartbeat of each other. When the scheduler senses that the endpoint is no longer returning a heartbeat, it will remove the scheduler and remove the endpoint and say it's no longer active. You'll get a message in the log saying that the endpoint has failed its heartbeat and it's the default is 5 minutes. Once the scheduler detects the endpoint is no longer available, it's going to switch the state from executing to an unknown state in the scheduler database. Once that state becomes unknown, when you restart the endpoint, the job scheduler will query the endpoint and find the last state. Since the last state the endpoint knew about was placed the job in the in the restartable state, the job scheduler will update its state table and to be in the restartable state for this particular job. Move on to slide number 45. This is the trace string that Web Server Level 2 support would normally ask for when we need to diagnose problems. If you ever have a problem where a job is not executing or it's stuck in a certain state or an abnormal state, we will ask you to enable these trace string on the job scheduler and on the endpoint And then on slide number 46, these are the job logs that we will request for when we have to diagnose the problem. We will need the server logs from the job scheduler and the endpoint, and the job logs that were written out from the first job. These job logs will be needed to be provided for the endpoint server and on the scheduler server. Go to slide 46. Basically, that covers the troubleshooting section. In this presentation, we provide an overview of the Westfair Compute Grid batch environment. We discuss the programming models and the operational enhancements provided in Westfair 8.5. I went over configuring the default batch environment and some troubleshooting tips on two common problems that we as level 2 encounter in that environment. To move on to slide number 48. Here's a couple of links for the additional resources that we, you guys could go more than freely to go to and review anything you wish. I'll turn this back over to David.
Thank you, Peter and Mahesh, for a great presentation. And finally, don't forget to connect with us. You can be notified about upcoming webcasts related to the product and topics discussed today by subscribing to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange mailing list. Simply send an email to wsehelp@us.ibm.com with the subject WSTE Subscribe to get a list of mailing lists and to subscribe. Also, if there is a topic you would like to see scheduled or if you have any comments that would help us improve our future webcasts, please let us know at that same email address. You could also connect with us through our Facebook page and our Twitter account. Talk to us and let us know how we can make this program better for you. We welcome any ideas that you may have. Thanks again for your participation. At this time, we would like to open the lines for questions.
At this time, there are no questions on the phone.
Thank you. I do see one question in the group chat. Someone is asking if Compute Grid is a plug-in or part of WebSphere version 8.5.
To answer that question, it's a part of the WAS version 8.5.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
And then there's another question in the group chat. Can jars be put in the job scheduler?
No, actually the job scheduler is a system application. Customer, they need to build their own applications, if I understand that correctly.
All right, thank you. And then the next question, what high availability options exist for the job scheduler?
It's a clustered scheduler which can be deployed to a scheduler as endpoints.
Okay, thank you.
So Mahesh, if I may add a point there. Right.
Sure.
So, for high availability of the job scheduler, right, so I think Peter pointed out that the job scheduler can be deployed or assigned to a host. And the deployment target could be a clustered scheduler, right, and where you have a cluster of application servers as members of the cluster. And once you have that, and along with a network database for the backend for the job scheduler, you can submit, monitor, and manage your jobs through any one of the application scheduler servers. I hope that answers the question.
All right, thank you. And then there's another question. Is there documentation about how to set up and configure a sample job scheduler SPI implementation to facilitate the group or group role policies?
There are some information on the Info Center. We can refer a specific URL to whoever the question is from.
Okay. I'm going to put up the first slide. If this person wants to contact you, since we don't know your contact information, you can send an email to Mahesh or Peter. Their email address is on the first slide of the presentation. And then the next question, is a single JVM processing the job? If I read that right.
So, David, I think we probably may need some information here. But in the meantime, I can try to respond to what I can make of it. Right. I think this may be related to, parallel processing where a job can be processed in a single JVM across multiple threads or across multiple JVMs. Based on what that short one-line question was, right? There are many different types of ways you can process a job in the WebSphere batch or in Java batch in 8.5, right? So you have your regular job, a single-threaded job, right? So where you can process in a traditional single-threaded job execution style, right? That model is still supported. Along with that, you can process jobs parallelly, or a single job can be split into multiple parallel sub-jobs and processed across multiple threads in a single JVM or across multiple JVMs.
Thank you. Should job schedulers exclusively be on exclusive WAS or other apps can coexist?
Based on your job volume, it's probably a good idea to put the job scheduler on a separate server instance so that, if you have a large volume of jobs that are being processed, you don't want the job scheduler to be competing for the resource, the CPU or memory resource with the actual application that may also be running on the same server. It's a good practice to put the job scheduler on a separate JVM.
Thank you. And then here's a question, maybe you'll know what this means. How much will it compete with Control-M tool?
I think it's probably a question on our job scheduler, and our job scheduler is not going to be trying to provide the capabilities of a typical enterprise scheduler. Think of our job scheduler as a simple dispatcher, and at best, it can look at the CPU consumption on the individual endpoint servers, right? And based on your job's requirement or the memory CPU needs based on some historical data, we may be able to best select an endpoint to process. That is as much that our job dispatcher does. It's not going to be a workflow engine like a typical enterprise scheduler. It's not going to do all of the capabilities that an enterprise scheduler provides. However, we do provide out-of-box connectors that can allow you to submit, monitor, manage jobs through your enterprise schedulers like Control-M or Tivoli Workload Scheduler. So, yes, you would, if you want, and a lot of customers I've seen continue to use their enterprise schedulers for submitting jobs, and our job scheduler will act more of a dispatcher at that point.
Thank you. And then the next question, is it possible to load balance between JVMs in the cluster?
Yes, and our job scheduler uses a weighted round robin as the simplest form to dispatch jobs across multiple endpoint servers, and with the intelligent management pack, the application placement capability, we can even do a smarter workload distribution to meet some service policies.
Thank you. And then the next question, what specifically are the differences between the compute grid and the B8.5 job scheduler?
So the compute grid version 8 is actually rolled into WebSphere Application Server 8.5. So it's a complete roll-up of Compute Grid version 8. So the only difference is you don't have to purchase a separate stack product. You don't have to install it as a separate stack, and you don't have to augment the profiles separately. So otherwise, there are no differences in functionality between Compute Grid version 8 and the job scheduler in WAS 8.5. It's a complete roll-up of Compute Grid into WAS 8.5.
All right. Thank you. And then one more question I see. Do you have any typical workload examples where you would use this product?
Yes. So there are lot of, you know, yes, so there are some key examples or scenarios that you can think of on how, you know, how to take advantage of this batch capability. And, you know, I could, or Mahesh or Peter could probably point you to some documentation that kind of walks you through the typical six or seven scenarios that we see where this batch capability can be utilized.
Thank you. Oh, and then here's another question. Can the Liberty profile also leverage the job scheduler?
So in WAS 8.5, any of the batch components are supported only in the traditional, you know, the full ND or full base WAS application server. Currently, we do not have the scheduler capability or the batch container capability on Liberty in 8.5.
Thank you. So at this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation, and we hope you'll join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on the site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Mahesh and Peter, for presenting today.